Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Extra Serving, a podcast by Nation's Restaurant News. I'm your host, Holly Petrie, here with today's episode. The phrase right now in restaurants appears to be ghost kitchens and virtual brands, and it seems like Sweetgreen may be dipping his toes into that. Today, on our podcast, Nancy interviewed Nicolas Chamet, Chief Concept Officer at Sweetgreen, to talk about just that. Will they or won't they? Only one way to find out. Here's Nancy.
Hello, I'm Nancy Luna, Senior Editor at Nation's Restaurant News. Welcome to the Extra Serving Podcast. Today, I'm delighted to have Nicolas Chamet as our guest. He is the co-founder and Chief Concept Officer of Sweetgreen. Thanks, Nick, for being on the show. It's always nice when we have a co-founder of a concept on the podcast. So maybe, Nick, you could start off by telling us a little bit about Sweetgreen and its mission.
So Sweetgreen is a fast casual restaurant concept that myself and my two friends founded actually almost exactly 13 years ago while we were seniors at Georgetown in DC. And, you know, we looked around while we were students there and just had this constant problem and conversation every day around having nowhere to eat that made us feel good or fit our values or really aligned with, you know, how we wanted to eat. And so as we started to learn more, we realized that it was an opportunity to help evolve fast casual food and think about creating an option that where people didn't have to sacrifice quality or health for taste or convenience.
Awesome. Well, since then, and where were, and the first one opened in DC?
First one was in Georgetown in a 560 square foot little former hamburger shack on M
Awesome.
Street.
Very cool. Well, since then, your brand has done some innovative moves, especially prior to the pandemic with the Outposts program. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that program that you've done and how you've had to modify this channel during the coronavirus pandemic.
Sure. So I would say along our whole, you know, 13-year journey at Sweetgreen, part of what we've done is really tried to reimagine the whole experience and transaction of getting food and try to remove a lot of the friction that existed there and make it more convenient. So over the years, that meant opening different formats or introducing pickup or delivery. And, you know, one of the channels that we built in the last few years was a program called Outpost. And so Outpost was basically a no fee delivery service focused on delivering customized orders to offices or, you know, groups of people across the country. And within the year that we launched it, we had scaled to over 1,000 partners nationwide. And so it was, you know, our fastest growing channel, and which was really the thing that was really great about Outpost was that it created a truly frictionless way for our customers or new customers to interact with our food. You know, they didn't have to leave their office. There was a shelf that, you know, in their lobby or in their office where the food just came to them for no delivery fee. So it was a really frictionless way to eat healthy and connect with Sweetgreen. So that was growing fast. Once the pandemic hit, because so many of those were in offices and because we saw what was happening around us, we decided very quickly to pivot our impact, our Outpost team to more of an impact focus. So really thinking about how do we serve those on the front lines in hospitals and hospital workers. And so we pivoted the whole team, the sales team, the logistics team, all the kitchens, the operations, to serve healthcare frontline workers for free, delivered straight to the hospitals. So, and then since we started that in March, we've served over 375,000 bowls to over 500 hospitals around the country.
Wow, well, that's incredible. And thank you for doing that for the healthcare workers, because man, they are working round the clock and hard. Do you ever see pivoting back to office Outpost, because everything seems to be changing? Everybody's learned how to telecommute. How have you thought that through?
You know, we definitely expect to go back to offices, but I think this time, aside from being grateful we were able to interact with so many of these amazing heroes on the front lines and do our part to support them, you know, it's allowed us the time to think about how Outpost as a program can evolve and how we can create more dynamic ways to be frictionless and reach people wherever they are, whether it's at the home, at the office. Thinking about other places where Outposts can meet customers.
Yeah.
So, you know, we are thinking about how to evolve and broaden the Outpost program. So thinking about it at home, where, for example, employers can offer Sweetgreen stipends to their employees so they can enjoy it at home and get the meals partially or fully covered on remote days. At the office, so thinking about, you know, the program that we were scaling pre-COVID, where, you know, an order comes straight to your office, you know, same time, same place, delivered daily to your building via digital ordering, or some combination of those things. So I think as we think about evolving the digital product to ultimately meet customers' needs and new routines, you know, we still are really excited about Outpost and are, you know, continuing to grow it.
Great. Well, thanks for that update. So you have about 110 restaurants. How many have reopened the dining rooms? Can you give us an update on how your business is doing with tackling off-premise versus carry-out and dine-in?
You know, yeah, we were at 110 restaurants today. And, you know, just like in all retail and restaurant businesses, it's been, an interesting few months with a lot of challenges and a lot of uncertainty and a lot of unknown around what we should open, how we should open, and, you know, really monitoring it daily and weekly and, you know, as things continue to change in every city. But today, none of our dining rooms are opened except for two in Denver. And those dining rooms are really, less than 50% of the tables are there and they're spaced apart. And, you know, the way all of our Sweetgreens operate today, all 110 restaurants have a whole new set of elevated safety standards and procedures for team members and customers and couriers. So really, you know, team member and guest safety is our number one priority. And you know, we feel proud around the new elevated standards that we've put out there and feel like we're creating a safe environment for our team members and our customers. And it's allowing us to continue to serve healthy food to our guests.
I'd like to talk about safety, but before I ask that, what are you choosing purposely to keep dining rooms off limits, or are you restricted still in the states that you're in it?
You know, a lot of the regulations are changing pretty regularly across all the markets. So for safety and streamlining purposes, we feel the best option is just to keep pretty much all of our dining rooms closed for the time being. And like I said, this is something that we are now watching daily and weekly and monthly. And so when the time comes that we feel like customers, you know, want to dine in and have, and we feel like the regulations have been lifted and we feel like doing that, then we'll make that change. But it's pretty, you know, it's very dynamic. It's something that we are not just watching how the regulations change across all markets, but, you know, we're spending a lot of time, as always, even pre-COVID, listening to our customers and just making sure that they feel heard and that we're creating the right experience for them, likewise with our team members.
Are they telling you that they're still going to do carry out anyways, even if your dining rooms are open?
Well, part of what we're seeing is just, you know, our digital channels are performing incredibly well. So, you know, our customers are saying that they feel really great about not just digital ordering, but whether it's pickup or delivery, and that experience of them feels, and different customers can opt into different, you know, parts of that experience. But for now, just, you know, with all the uncertainty around it and some of the regulations changing across all markets, that's where we're at today.
Well, that's a good segue into, I wanted to ask you about your digital channels. Having a very kind of well-oiled app and desktop experience has been crucial for a lot of chains. We've been writing a lot about that. Drive-throughs help, but I don't think you have those. But tell us how your digital business has been performing, and it sounds like you have some confidence in it that you don't really need right now to open dine-in, even if you can.
You know, our digital channels have always been, pre-COVID was our biggest focus and really something that we've invested in for, you know, gosh, I would say started investing in building our app, you know, 8 or 9 years ago, and really believed that that's where a lot of the customer transaction and interaction was going to go. Just again, in an effort to remove as much friction and really make the experience of ordering and eating food and getting your food even more convenient. So it's been something we've been investing in for years with, you know, our internal tech team and our own Sweetgreen app. Pre-COVID, you know, over 50% of our orders were already taking place digitally. So we had a pretty deep digital connection with our consumers.
That's pretty incredible number. What is it now?
it's higher than that. And again, obviously, it's shifting as like restaurants close and open and you know, as we changed, a lot of our channels are shifting around. But it's definitely higher than that. And part of what COVID has done is it's just kind of, you know, pushed us even further into a more digitally engaged relationship with our customer. In January, we actually launched our native Sweetgreen delivery app. So timing was great there. It's something we had been working on for a year. So allowing customers to order delivery from, you know, from our app directly, and interact with us in a more seamless way.
you know, we've done some stories about loyalty programs are, I mean, they've been around for a long time, but really having them personalized, especially at gearing diners through the app. Are you able to see more of the consumers want that delivery directly through your experience, through your app versus a third party?
You know, I think it having the direct connection with our customers on our app just also allows us to really think about what kind of experience we can create for customers, whether it's original content or our loyalty program, really thinking about how to create a more personalized and customized experience for them. And so that gets us really excited. And so even as we think about our loyalty program, you know, definitely one of the goals as we work on it is to create a more personalized experience that really tailors the menu, the offering, the experience and everything to the customer and their needs.
What type of things, I'm curious about consumer ordering behaviors. We've seen, average ticket seems to be up as well because they're buying a lot. Maybe they're buying more at dinner versus lunch. What trends are you seeing at Sweetgreen in terms of what they are ordering? And have you developed any new menu items?
Yeah, you know, a lot of our customer trends have certainly shifted during COVID, and it's something that we're continuing to watch and learn and again, trying to understand as best we can how our customers' needs are changing. One of the biggest changes we made was actually broadening our menu. So during pre-COVID, it had been part of our goal and vision was to broaden our menu beyond just predominantly salads and bowls. And it had been something we were working on slowly and imagined probably rolling out in 2021. And when COVID hit, really listening to our customer and watching how they were transacting and how their food behaviors and routines were shifting, you know, we said, let's just roll this out quicker because we think it fits the needs of our customers. So by the end of April, we rolled out a whole new category on our menu of plates and sides. So thinking about heartier options that really appeal to diners at dinner or diners that want more satiating options, and then sides. So taking a lot of our incredible ingredients that we source from our farmers and compiling them and cooking them into beautiful side dishes. So thinking about attachment and giving our customers a broader assortment of our food to be able to create not just a lunch meal, but you know, a great dinner meal or a family meal, thinking about group occasions. So it's really pushed us to stretch how fast we thought about broadening our menu. And it's really been an exciting way to just serve our customer and really make sure that we're giving them a broader assortment so it fits their need states. And especially with all these new routines that all of our customers have.
So you were planning on doing something like plates a year from now, and you just accelerated that in weeks.
We did. You know, there was that moment in the company where we all, you know, I remember the call. It was one of our leadership calls with all of our VPs and directors, and we sat around and said, we have this thing we're working on. We think it fits what our customers' accelerated needs are given COVID. Let's just do it. And we all kind of locked arms and said, let's do it. We're going to roll this out in 30 days instead of a year. And it's not going to be perfect, but we're going to learn a lot. And when we get something wrong, we'll iterate quickly and just continue to learn. And overall, it's been great. And you know, I have a lot of gratitude to our team that sprinted on that and made it come to life, because it was certainly quite a sprint for so many of our teams, our brilliant ops teams, supply chain, marketing, you know, everyone. It was a full company-wide effort. So it was also really great to see everyone come together around launching something like that.
For the sides, did you have to create new sides, or were those part of the menu?
You know, they were part of... again, these were categories that we had been ideating and testing slowly. So it wasn't like we overnight said, here's a brand new menu. But operationalizing it and bringing it to life was certainly not something we had planned to do in 30 days. So again, it was part of our journey and vision that we foresaw for the next year or two, but we just decided to accelerate it.
Give me an example, what have consumers been gravitating towards in terms of one of the plate options?
Yes, I would say our most popular plate option is a chicken chimichurri plate. So it features this we launched cauliflower rice, which was something we've been testing, which, you know, has a really awesome supply chain. We're getting it from CC's Organic, And also we blitz in a lot of our kale stems, which end up becoming, you know, food waste from our shucking our kale in the restaurant. So it has a really great color and bite and texture to it. And then it's a whole roasted blackened chicken thigh on top with this really herbaceous chimichurri sauce and some other veggies and pickled veggies. So that has been a huge favorite. And it's been exciting to see customers order that for dinner with a side, for example. So just to see customers that weren't ordering sweet green for dinner before now are, you know, using these options to do that.
That's interesting that you kind of expanded your menu in many ways. Well, we're seeing a lot of chains trim down, but those are chains that have like a lot of items on their menu. I want to talk, since you talked about waste, it made me think you guys started testing a new packaging in early part of the year, like right before this whole pandemic. And packaging is such a crucial part of the experience now with consumers. Everybody's using, because you're doing everything almost delivery and takeout. Can you talk about that?
Sure. You know, I would say for the past few years, packaging has become a much bigger focus for us, not just from a digital experience and, you know, a customer experience point of view, thinking about how our food travels, how it holds, how we serve it, but also from a sustainability point of view. So really thinking about, you know, single-use packaging and how we can really reduce our footprint. And so last year we started working on a few pilots, one of which we accelerated in January and launched with a company called Footprint. So it was a PFAS-free bowl in San Francisco. We launched that in January. And again, testing different materiality, testing domestic production. So really thinking about not just from a materiality, but from a lining and then from a end of life cycle, really looking at the full scope of our packaging. So it's a lot of work, but our, you know, supply chain and operations and sustainability teams, sorry about that.
That's okay.
I've really spent a lot of time looking at this program and really making it a something that we're proud to test. And we'll be launching by the end of 2020.
So is it still only in the San Francisco store or how many units?
Yeah, right now it's still in the San Francisco market being tested, and we're planning an end of 2020 rollout nationwide.
And how's supply chain on that? I mean, I imagine almost every, you're competing with chains everywhere on packaging.
It's been really great. You know, we've, like I said, for the past couple of years, we've really spent time understanding the landscape, the materiality, and the sustainability implications of so many of these decisions. And we really found this amazing partner in Footprint that we've been working with. And, you know, they've been incredible partners to us, and really we're excited about this new packaging. Not just this rollout, but, you know, for us, we think about continued iteration of our packaging just to create a more sustainable model and a better experience digitally. As more of our business becomes digital, you know, we really want to think about form and function, how our packaging travels, how it holds, you know, how the courier throws it in their bag. You really think about every single variable here. And so, you know, supply chains globally have obviously been disrupted and will continue to be. So we're watching it closely, but with an awesome partner like Footprint, we're still pretty confident in our hitting our timing.
So it delivers well, like it holds up, the packaging.
Yes.
That's good to know. So let's talk a little bit about delivery. You know, we've seen a lot of consolidation in the last month with this space. It's getting more and more competitive. And you do work with third-party delivery companies?
We work with Uber Eats and a number of the other delivery platforms, again, to just reach as many customers as possible, especially in this time.
Did you do that before the pandemic?
We work more closely with Uber Eats, who is our partner on our native delivery for last mile.
Okay.
Today, yeah, we are on a number of other platforms really to just reach as many customers as possible.
Do you think consolidation is going to be harmful or helpful to the industry?
It's hard to say. I mean, you can make an argument for both ways. You're starting to see some of that consolidation. I think ultimately we want to make sure that whatever relationship we have with one or many of them, that it's ultimately very customer centric, and we put ourselves in a position to integrate with them, but also just make sure we are giving our customers the best experience. So whether it's access to courier supply or thinking about fee structures, and then ultimately, again, on our native program, native platform. It allows us to really think about the programming and the menu and all the different features that just create not just a more frictionless experience, but just a better experience for our customers. So we're very, very excited about our the continued growth of our native platform, which is since COVID has really, you know, accelerated pretty fast.
We've reported a lot about chains adding premium pricing to their third-party delivery menus. Are you doing this to offset the commission fees? Meaning the price is higher on the third-party delivery app versus what you sell in store and even through your own native delivery?
Yeah, you know, I think you've seen that. We were seeing that on some other menus. It's something that, just like so many other options on our thinking about native versus third party, that we talk about and ultimately want to make sure that we are creating the best experience for our customers. But at the same time, we want to make sure that couriers and team members are also taken care of. So there's a balance there that we want to make sure that between customer fees, but also making sure that couriers and team members get taken care of. So it is a balance.
So are the prices for Sweetgreen on third-party delivery slightly higher just to offset, just because you have to make money, right?
Today they're not, but it's something that open conversation. So right. Again, I think in a time like this, we are, you know, kind of considering and looking at all options right. across the platforms and just looking at, again, how to make sure that the business model makes sense, but ultimately that we're creating the best customer experience too.
You talked about your robust digital sales. Is there any way you can break it down a little bit for us, Nick? Like, are you seeing more people doing substantially? Do they prefer carry out? I don't know if you do curbside. We haven't talked about it. Or do they like the native delivery versus the third party?
Yes, so I would say, you know, last week, digital users made up about 70% of our active customers, and our native channel is really growing the fastest. So really excited about the continued, adoption of customers joining Sweetgreen's app and experiencing our food that way. That is really where a lot of our focus is.
Good.
Well, you get that. Ahead, for us, I would say order ahead remains the highest grossing channel across all of our markets.
Right. And order ahead, so they're coming into the store to pick up. Well, right? Is that what you mean?
Yes. And you can order ahead for pickup or delivery, but yes.
Okay. Well, that's good to know, because it's good that you got those customers coming through your pipeline, right? So that you can connect with them through your loyalty program. So that brings up, we said we were going to talk about safety. What are you doing? I know you used to have those pickup shelves. Do you still have it that way, or how does it all work now? How has the dynamic changed?
Sure. So, you know, I would say the experience throughout our whole restaurant for the customer side, for the team member side, for the courier side has really evolved. And so today, if you think about the pickup experience at a Sweetgreen, you know, pre-COVID, you just used to walk in and you'd see customers kind of waiting in groups around the shelves for their order to come out, or maybe they were there a bit earlier, or there were a number of couriers. Today, we've set up a much different queue and designated areas for people to wait and how close they're waiting to each other. If it's not your pickup time yet, there is exterior waiting area in most of our restaurants. So really queuing customers and couriers up separately, 6 feet apart from each other with masks on, and then you're able to come in once your order pickup time is there. And then inside, we have a fully dedicated concierge team member that manages the shelf and makes sure there's no crowding there, make sure that if you come in that it's your, you know, it's your pickup time is there, and they help facilitate kind of the making sure that there's no crowding or people waiting at the shelving. And then for ordering in restaurant, same thing. There's a whole queue management process where customers line up 6 feet away from each other. They stand a certain distance away from the front line, and we require masks to be worn inside the restaurant as well.
Good to know on how so many systems have had to change and adapt. Being nimble is really important. I wanted to ask you a question, because I know you also started working with Zuul Kitchens on the ghost kitchen space prior to all this. Can you talk about, and that's in New York City, can you talk about this new line of revenue channel? Because we've just been seeing so many brands in the middle of all this, just jumping on to this, you know, this type of, you know, delivery only model to expand their footprint and just get more money coming in since their dining rooms are closed.
Yeah. So for us, you know, we've been testing a number of things and a number of types of capacities. Zool is one of them, Zool Kitchens in New York. And for us, you know, we're very focused on, like I said, delivery and native delivery. Right now, Ghost Kitchens is still a test for us. So, you know, we're excited to have that as a learning opportunity. It's not something we're going, we're not opening a huge number of them this year. It still remains something we're testing and understanding how we need that capacity separately versus built into our existing restaurants.
But generally, can you talk about what it is that you're looking for in the test? I mean, are you looking to, and how are things going with Zool? I mean, does everything come in? Do they have their own app, or is it just, does somebody, the consumer, not know in New York City when they're ordering from you that they're actually, the food is actually being prepared in that sort of ghost kitchen space?
So the Zool kitchen space for us and the ghost kitchen spaces for us just act just like any other Sweetgreen kitchen. So it's our team members, our food, our prep, our app, and our experience. So it's meant to be agnostic to the customer. They don't know if it's coming from the Sweetgreen kitchen or that kitchen because it's the same exact product and process. And so for us, we've just been testing, you know, just trying to understand the different business models and understand which one makes more sense to roll out and ultimately would give us more coverage to be able to have a better delivery experience for our customers.
So you're still in sort of the beta testing mode, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And still not sure whether you would expand it. I know there's a lot of other types of ghost kitchens or delivery-only models that we've been writing about, like these host kitchens where you would actually, almost like licensing agreements. Have you looked into those, and what do you think about that type of experience?
When you mean licensing your food for someone else to operate it?
Right. Like we've done some, there's been some new sort of concepts where they're not just really your, like the Zool kitchen concept, but where somebody sort of licensed the Sweetgreen brand and they're building it into their like restaurant, like a Ruby Tuesday or something like that.
You know, I would say in general, we are incredibly curious around learning and testing pretty much anything. The one thing that we're very protective of is our food quality and, you know, not just how we source it, but how we prepare it. So I'd say that would be something that'd be hard for us to test. And it's not something we're working on immediately, but in general, we're pretty open, you know, to learning as much about all these different models, because I do think in a time like this, there's going to be some really exciting disruption and innovation to how food is prepared and ultimately how it reaches customers. So, you know, we are, very close to, all those things.
Yeah, and it just helps expand your reach. And well, that brings me to growth. I mean, what are you guys doing in terms of, did you have a growth plan prior to the pandemic and where you wanted to go next? What markets and where are you opening now?
So pre-COVID, we had, you know, really exciting growth plans and we're starting to accelerate. And so with the pandemic, we decided to briefly pause the new store openings and just ensure that we were, you know, opening our restaurants the right way and thinking about how we were impacting the communities and our safety procedures and just reevaluating almost every part of, you know, the growth plan from not just where or how many, but how we were opening these restaurants. So we took a pause. In June, we started reopening, not just reopening, but also opening new locations. So since June, we've opened 5 new locations in LA, in Chicago, and actually 2 in Denver, which is a new market for us. And so we've started to reopen. We started our new store opening process back up, and you know, we're excited to be opening more this year. And again, with a whole new set of procedures around, you know, everything from how we do the punch list to how we open to what, you know, how we're training our teams day one on the new safety procedures. But we will add 2 additional markets this year. So we'll be opening in Austin, which is actually happening next week, and then in Miami before the end of the year.
Congratulations. That's great. It's probably too late. Those were in the works, but do you see designing stores differently? I mean, what kind of lasting effects do you think the pandemic will have, and is that going to change the way you think about how you design your stores? I know, you know, we were on a conference call yesterday with the Noodles and Company, and they were talking about building smaller format stores and stores with car lanes. Shake Shack has talked about it. Have you guys been thinking about that?
Yes, and you know, those are all things we were talking about pre-pandemic, so it's kind of just accelerated some of that. So, yeah. You know, part of our acceleration and growth plan for not just this year and next year is a lot of format work. So thinking about new formats and new experiences that allow us to open more places and reach more customers. ultimately, I think it has changed how we think about even small, even the small details in how we build our restaurants. So thinking about not just back of house, team member experience and safety procedures, but thinking about front of house experience and queuing and you know, customer journey, courier journey, how we want people to move through our space or not even come into the space and pick up outside. And so there's all these, nuances and larger ways that it's affected how we think about building our restaurants and ultimately building the experience. So, you know, that evolution has just, you know, been accelerated by COVID for us.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we're running out of time here, Nick, but we've covered a lot of ground. Is there anything else you'd like to say or mention about what Sweetgreen is working on to navigate this really complex time?
No, I think you've asked all really great questions around our business. You know, the one part that we've also stayed very focused on is just trying to remain great partners to our farmers, producers, and growers. You know, our supply chain is such an important part of Sweetgreen and our food ethos. So, you know, throughout this whole pandemic, it's been something that we've, you know, stayed very close to and tried to make sure that we remain incredible partners to them. And part of why we want to continue opening restaurants and serving customers is to be able to keep buying from our farmers and make sure that we're supporting them.
Right.
You know, the restaurant business can be a tough business, but the business of being a farmer is even harder. So we want to make sure that we show up as great partners to them.
Right. And that's something that the consumer sometimes forgets, you know, where their food is coming from. I think they're getting better, but yes, definitely so important. And I'm glad you mentioned that. And I'd just like to leave you with one quick little suggestion. I'm in Orange County. So next time you think about growing out in Southern California, think Orange County, because I know you don't have one here.
it's on our list. So we'll be there soon.
All right. Oh, there you go. Then that's all we need to say. Well, thanks. Thanks, Nick, very much. We've enjoyed having you. It's been a pleasure. I know it's a very busy time for everyone in the industry. So thank you for taking the time to talk to us. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks so much, Nancy.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Extra Serving. Next week, we'll have an interview with the CEO of First Watch, Chris Tommaso. See you then.